This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Banks Centre for Astrophysics. For more details, see jodcast.net.
The May Night Sky. Well, sadly for those of us that actually like going to sleep, in order to see a dark sky in May, you have to wait up a good bit later. And I've been staying up even at the very end of April till about 11 o'clock to get a good dark sky to see, for example, Saturn and some of the other clusters. Well, when it does get dark, you'll see the constellation Gemini setting towards the southwest with its bright stars, Castor above and Pollux below. And Leo is basically holding pride of place, sorry about that, in the south with the bright star Regulus. Now, in fact, Leo looks a bit different at the moment because below it, some distance below, is in fact the planet Saturn. We'll come back to that later on. Below Gemini is the tiny constellation of Canis Minor, which has a bright star called Procyon, that I quite often mix up with other things. Really, there are only two stars you can see in that particular constellation. And then over to the southeast is the constellation of Virgo. It's another region of sky where we don't really see very much with our unaided eyes. There's really only one bright star there called Spica. However, as I've said several times, between Spica and the tail, in the sense of Leo the Lion, is a region we call the realm of the galaxies, because a telescope, even a small one under dark skies, will actually pick out a large number of galaxies in that direction. They form part of what is called the Virgo Cluster, which is in fact the largest cluster in our part of the universe. Clusters themselves cluster and form superclusters, and the Virgo cluster is at the heart of the Virgo supercluster. Our own little local group of perhaps 50 galaxies, of which the two largest are the Milky Way and Andromeda galaxies, is on the outskirts of this supercluster. I sometimes think of superclusters as being like large conurbations. We live to the south of Manchester, and Manchester, you might imagine, is the Virgo cluster. There are smaller but still quite large clusters surrounding it. In our case, these would be Oldham and Stockport and Bolton and Bury, places like that. Further out still, we have some rather upmarket little villages like Prestbury, where some of the Manchester United footballers live, and you see lots of Bentleys and all sorts of cars around there. Well, that's a bit like us. We're a rather upmarket little local group of galaxies at the very edge of the Virgo supercluster. And another region of sky to look at particularly well this month, high overhead in the north, is a constellation of Ursa Major, and that has also many interesting objects. If you go on the night sky page of the Jodrell Bank website, just put night sky into Google, then in fact, in the latter part, it talks about some of the nice things you can see with binoculars or a telescope in the constellations I've just talked about. Well, what about the planets? Well, two of them, Mercury and Saturn, I'm going to talk about in the highlights of the month, but let's have a look at the other ones, starting first with Jupiter. Now, it's a morning object, but as it gets further and further away from the Sun, in fact, by the end of the month, it's 101 degrees away, round to the west from the Sun's position. It obviously rises sooner than the Sun and gets to a somewhat higher elevation. But again, as I've said before, at this time of year, the ecliptic, which is the path that the Sun and the planets sort of basically line along, is inclined relatively gently to the eastern horizon. So even at its best, when it's due south, and we shall see it there in a month or so, it'll still only be about 25 degrees elevation above the southern horizon. And now it's about 23 degrees above the horizon when you can see it just before dawn. So it's fairly low down, and that means that the atmosphere rather degrades our images. But even so, you'll have a chance to look at the lovely Galilean moons, Io, Europa, Callisto, and Ganymede. So perhaps it's a time to start beginning to look at Jupiter, but of course you do have to wake up fairly early in the morning. On May the 17th, Jupiter lies just below the last quarter moon in the pre-dawn sky. So again, probably it's something for later in the year when we can see it in the evening. Well, Saturn and Mercury we'll come to, but let's go to Mars. Now, Mars is also low in the pre-dawn sky. It's beginning to rise increasingly earlier than the sun as the month progresses, and so becomes easier to spot. Has a magnitude of about plus 1.2, so it's not all that bright yet. By the end of the month, it's about 40 degrees away from the sun, and again, because of this low angle of the ecliptic, it will still only be about 11 degrees above the horizon, and I shall come back to that in the highlight in just a few moments. Venus will also be covered in the highlight. It passed between the Earth and the Sun in March and is now visible, like Mercury, in the pre-dawn sky. And at the 1st of May, it will only be 12 degrees above the horizon as the Sun rises, so it will become easier to spot later in the month. It's at magnitude about 4.4, plus 4.4 at mid-month, and it's up to the right of Mars, as we shall see. In the middle of May, a small telescope, if you've got one, will nicely show a crescent phase just about the same as a first quarter moon, or just before that. That magnitude of 4.4 stays pretty much constant throughout all the time we see Venus. Now, as Venus is going around the Sun, sometimes it's on the far side of the Sun, it's nearly fully illuminated but quite small. When it's on our side of the Sun, it's much larger in angular size, but only a thin crescent is illuminated. Those two effects cancel out, so the actual illuminated area in angular size that we see basically stays the same, and so the brightness of Venus doesn't change by very much. Okay, well, let's just finish off the northern sky with some of the highlights of the month. Well, I've mentioned Saturn, and in fact, May is probably the last good month to observe Saturn in the evening sky. It's lying below the body of Leo, some 8 degrees below the star Theta Leonis, and it's really quite difficult to miss. Just find Leo and look below it. It starts the month at magnitude plus 0.8, so it's not all that bright, and this falls to about plus 0.9 as the month progresses. The angular size, again, is pretty constant, but it's dropping from 18.8 arc seconds to 18.1. And as I've said before, Saturn is significantly less bright this year because the rings are very close to Edge On. In fact, during the middle of May, they're about 4 degrees from the line of sight, so you don't really see them very much. Looking at Saturn with quite a large telescope just a couple of nights ago, what was very obvious was the shadow of those rings as a dark line seen across the surface of Saturn. One nice thing when using a telescope at the moment is because the rings are edge-on, there's far less glare from them, and it actually makes it rather easier to see some of the satellites around it, and I counted 5 the other night. Well, in fact, towards the end of the year, those rings will be virtually edge-on, and we wouldn't see them at all, but by that time, in fact, Saturn won't be really very visible from here. We've got to wait until about 2016 before they get at their widest again. And as I said, a small telescope will easily show Titan, but a somewhat larger telescope, perhaps 8 or 10 inches, can see some of the smaller satellites as well. Well, we've had a good look at Mercury in April, had a good opposition. In fact, on May the 2nd, we perhaps have a last chance, really, to see it this month, because it's coming towards what's called inferior conjunction, when it passes behind the Sun. That's on May the 18th. On May the 2nd, if you can actually get somewhere where a really good low western horizon is visible, you have a chance to spot Mercury just to the left of the rather pretty Pleiades cluster, about half an hour, 40 minutes after sunset. Now, the sky is pretty bright still at that time, so you'd almost certainly need binoculars to pick it up. But if it's clear and you have a good low horizon, Mercury and the Pleiades will make a very pretty sight. Its magnitude is about plus 1.1 on the 1st of May, which isn't too bad, but amazingly, in 7 days, it drops to plus 2.7. Just shows you how quickly things can change. Finally, on May the 21st, if you don't mind getting up too early in the morning, you have a chance to see Venus, Mars, and a very thin crescent moon in the hour before dawn. In fact, about the best time is 4:15 BST, but I suspect not many of you are up, and that's on the 21st of May. What you will actually see is Venus to the right, Mars to the left, below the thin crescent moon. But again, as I've said, the elevation above the horizon isn't very high. You'll need to have a good low eastern horizon, and I think binoculars will certainly help. So it's not a bad month, but of course, as we go towards June, there's less and less time to have a dark sky to observe the heavens. Well, I'm trying now to say something for the people who listen to the Jogcast in the Southern Hemisphere, and I do have a very lovely book that I brought back from New Zealand at the turn of the year. It's called the New Zealand Astronomical Yearbook, obviously for 2009. It comes from the Stardome Observatory, and it does have some very lovely maps, one for each month, which show you what you can see. And obviously, looking to the north, you're seeing many of the constellations that I've talked about. You won't see, I'm afraid, Ursa Major, but you'll see the others, but they happen to be upside down, which is just a pity. So Leo is sort of lying on its back rather than on its haunches. But if you look to the south, then of course you see the lovely part of the sky that we cannot see from our northern hemisphere. Well, low in the south, it's a fairly empty part of the sky, the constellations Turkana, for example. But there you do have the small Magellanic Cloud almost due south, about 9 p.m. in early May, and a little bit later as you go on. Above that to the right is the Large Magellanic Cloud, and they're two of the nearby galaxies in our local group that I've talked about before. As we go through the summer and towards the autumn, then the Milky Way rises higher in the sky. And even during May, we see a lovely strip of the sky. The center of our galaxy, which is towards the constellation of Sagittarius, is just rising in the southeast. Above that, we have the constellation of Scorpius, and you can't miss the very bright red star Antares, which is over towards the east. Above that is Lupus, and below Lupus and Centaurus, which is up to the right of Lupus, we have the band of the Milky Way, with a most beautiful region containing Crux, the Southern Cross, and the Vela and Carina constellations. And you have this wonderfully rich part of the Milky Way with, for example, the Eta Carina Nebula that's easily picked up by binoculars. Now, one way to find the Southern Cross are to actually use what are called the pointers. Alpha Centauri, which is one of the nearest stars to our own Earth, and also Beta Centauri. And they point up towards Crucis, the Southern Cross. There's a nice little cluster called the Jewel Box that you can see just to the lower left of the cross if you've got a small telescope. One interesting point is that I said that Alpha Centauri is one of the nearest stars, so it's actually very bright. But Beta Centauri is not as bright, perhaps a few times less bright, but in fact, it's about 100 times further away. So it's actually a very, very bright star. If you go to Beta Centauri and go up to the left to another bright star, beyond there with binoculars, you might see a little fuzzy glow. It's in fact Omega Centauri. Now, it has largely been thought to be, in fact, the most spectacular globular cluster that we have in the heavens. There's another one, by the way, called 47 Turkani, which is just below the small Magellanic Cloud. So you can see that almost due south and not too high in the sky. But recently, people have analyzed the stars in Omega Centauri, and they don't seem to fit the basic concept of a globular cluster. These are spherical clusters that were born about the same time as our own Milky Way galaxy, maybe a million stars. And the trouble with Omega Centauri is that it's got some younger stars as well, not just old ones. And some people now believe it might be the core of what was a galaxy. The outer parts were stripped off as it sort of came close to our own Milky Way. So it may not be a globular cluster. Nevertheless, it's a lovely object in the southern sky. So I do hope you enjoy observing the heavens during May.